Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Hodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. My name's Alex Hodes with StoneX. I'm the Director of Market Strategy on the Energy Team. And you're here with us on the first Focus on Fuels podcast. I'm here with colleague Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager Energy, and we're here interviewing our colleague Joe Zhu, project manager with our market intelligence team, and we're going to be discussing the stimulus in China and its effect on oil demand specifically. All right, so let's get into the show. So first, we're going to discuss a little bit of the headlines in the oil markets. We focus primarily on crude oil and refined products. And really, one of the big headlines has been the Israel and Iranian conflict, which has kind of flared up as of recent weeks. This has made huge swings in the oil market specifically. And one of these, we've kind of retraced back to where we were before the attacks. But what really got the market kind of heated was an interview with President Biden, where he basically did not deny that the U.S. could potentially help Israel attack Iranian oil infrastructure. And so the oil market was that jittery that it swung almost $7 higher on that headline, but now it's back down to $70 per barrel. And I'm saying that I'm referring to WTI crude oil. And so really that kind of said a lot about the oil market in general. How'd you kind of interpret those moves, Trevor?
Yeah, I think that more than anything, Israel in general right now is kind of a loose cannon. They're on their own right now. They're making their own decisions. They're listening to the West and the EU, but the UN, that is, I'm sorry. And really the reality to this whole thing is they never were going to attack those oil infrastructures in the first place that Biden and Netanyahu confirmed on Tuesday the 14th of this week. That's when we gapped down significantly lower. Think of the UN as they're not going to, want to deal with the waste product that's going to, all the environmental issues of hitting those oil facilities. So they're just simply not going to attack those. They're going to go for military infrastructure, things like that. So really the headline was important that Netanyahu kind of came out with there. It was good to see that. And obviously the market fell off significantly from that, but that was never a reality from the get-go there. So just interesting how the market reacted to that, thinking that we're going to, go into that realm there. So, I think it's important to realize though, that this is still a conflict that, is growing and there's still a lot of volatility that we could see in the future here. And we haven't seen a response from Israel yet. They're going to make one. And more than anything, this is a broader conflict that we're all, worried about and in general. And that's where that risk premium just seems to keep falling off. Every time there's some sort of headline that suggests that oil infrastructure is not going to get hit directly from Israel. So I just find that interesting. And I think that risk premium is starting to, continue to fade, and not sure that that's the right move by the oil market necessarily.
Yeah, I think it's more of a reflection of where hedge funds were positioned prior to that. So definitely, if you look at some of the CFTC data, so where hedge funds were positioned, they were extremely short prior to that. So really just the headline itself kind of made those hedge funds close those positions. We've seen a lot of those close those shorts. And so there's not as much of that risk premium in there as you kind of suggested. But now going forward, I think we've seen recent economic data and some of the major oil agencies are adjusting demand lower going ahead. So I think that's also helped the oil market go down lower again. EIA-adjusted lower oil demand, OPEC-reduced Chinese demand estimates. And that's something that we'll discuss a little bit later in the episode. That's kind of where the meat of our show hits, is some more stimulative effects from what China has kind of come out with, some actions that could hopefully spur on Chinese demand. Another headline that's been big, specifically in oil markets, has been hurricanes. Obviously, these have not really struck major oil infrastructure, but are now kind of taking their toll with regards to the demand side of things. There's over 50% of gasoline stations in Tampa area that still don't have gasoline. And above all else, I mean, it's more kind of a humanitarian crisis. So I don't mean to belittle it when we refer to its effect on the oil market itself, but those haven't really kind of hit any refineries or anything like that to where it's making a huge swing in oil prices. So this week is a banking holiday week, so we're going to see oil inventory data pushed to tomorrow. And so we don't have something to discuss directly with regards to petroleum inventories, but the expectations are for draws to continue. We are at that time period where refineries are kind of reducing the amount of gasoline that they're producing at the same time that gasoline demand is has ended. The peak gasoline demand season has really ended. Trevor, how have you been kind of seeing things with regards to on the customer front? We're kind of moving. We are in the diesel demand season. Harvest is definitely underway, which is a big thing in the Midwest specifically. But what are you kind of hearing?
Yeah, overall, demand has been relatively strong. Just looking at the EIA data, as you pointed out, it hasn't come out this week yet. But we've seen a relatively strong demand cycle on the diesel side. Gasoline seems to be holding up relatively well, too, considering all the economic woes that we're seeing right now. But with that being said, my customers are definitely seeing, I'm not getting a lot of feedback from them right now because, they're finishing up those end of year projects, whether it's construction or anything like that going into the winter. And then ag, obviously, too, has really picked up here recently. So those guys are really hitting the ground right now, very busy right now, which is good. And I think the biggest thing that we want to point out right now for anybody that's holding any inventory in the Midwest or anything outside of the Gulf Coast or Northeast, I would say that just be careful of basis fall offs. We always see that in the November time period there. So if you're holding on to some inventory, you got that hedged up. Or if you're not, just keep in mind that we're going to see some really drastic fall off. We're likely to see some really drastic local price, cash price fall offs. In that mid-November range, that's typically when we see it. So keep an eye on that and, drain those inventories as low as you can while the demand's here.
Yeah, and I think kind of from a broader perspective, I think that's diesel. We are in that season where we see kind of diesel demand with regards to agriculture. But then we, like you said, we're nearing the winter time, and that's when kind of heating fuels come at the forefront. That's propane, natural gas, heating oil for those on the East Coast and in other areas of the U.S. Do you have any kind of perspective on propane or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, we've seen a lot of price action here with these short-term spreads. The front month spread has been really volatile recently. It's been very weak due to the pipeline issues down there in Texas. I think it seems like that has been resolved. And we're beyond that now, and it seems like those the spread's starting to tide up. So I think the front month on Mont Belvieu is going to continue to firm up. Even yesterday and the previous 3 or 4 days, we've seen it strengthen, and even with the crude market falling. So that's pretty interesting. It's definitely kind of getting into that winter realm right now, where it's starting to disconnect with the WTI price, just because it's going to be more in line with what the actual demand, supply and demand dynamics are on the propane side. So, yeah.
I think that's really interesting also is we've seen some estimates that they're forecasting a draw in propane inventory. So we'll have to see tomorrow. And that's really kind of a counter-seasonal trend. So that would be very bullish for propane. But now let's kind of transition into one of a more of our kind of lighthearted sections of our podcast. And so in our office, we like to discuss things that are extremely important. You know, when we're not talking about markets, we're talking about food or sports. So I think today, because it's kind of a recent development, is we're going to discuss barbecue restaurants. We are based in Kansas City here, so that's kind of at the forefront of our mind when we think lunch. So there's a new restaurant in town called Wolfpack Barbecue. And can you just tell me a little bit about your review on Wolfpack?
Brisket is elite. All right. They are the real, it's the real deal. Really nice bar, thick cut, which I'm actually not even a huge fan of normally, but they managed to pull it off. It's definitely my favorite brisket I've had in Kansas City area, which is saying quite a bit. So it's definitely a top-notch spot just for that reason alone. Outside of the ribs, I've had a few other things and they're solid. But if you're going to go there, definitely go for the ribs. Salsas are very good too. So
yeah, I think when you say brisket and you don't like the thick cut brisket, I think you might offend some Texans that are listening to this. So all of you out there, please don't take any offense. He doesn't really know his brisket as much as you guys. So we're kind of, we try a little bit of everything in Kansas City, though.
That's right.
But now let's move on to kind of the meat of the show. And we're going to have an interview with Joe Zhu from our market intelligence team. And we're going to discuss kind of the recent developments in China. So we're here with Joe. Thank you so much for attending.
I thought you were going to bring up Joe's barbecue for an introduction, but
yeah.
Somehow.
We should have.
The original Joe here.
Yes. So first and foremost, can you provide just kind of like a glimpse into what it's like from Chinese economic standpoint? What we hear frequently is that Chinese demand is a little bit softer than what original expectations were. How's that kind of been reflected?
It has to be traced back to after COVID. China is trying to get rid of COVID right away with only 1 or 2 months window to get everybody infected with COVID and then stimulate the economy. And back then, probably 2023, March or May, people are thinking, okay, it's time for China to really recover from the COVID. And expectation from the market is pretty high. And in the first couple months, the traveling and consumption data comes out really good. So people thought, okay, the second half of 2023 will be similar. But it started downfall from there. Like starting from second half of 2023 to now, as you have heard of the Biden's new policy on in banning Chinese imports of all the semiconductors through all the news about China's population declining, the hope for Chinese economy is kind of burp. Like no one is trying to invest in China anymore. All the plants, like Apple plants, flee to Vietnam or India, and all the Wall Street investors will say, okay, China is not investable anymore. So it kind of carry along from then to around recently. And then the economy is starting to feel the pain. If you look at the CPI or PPI, PPI for the last 24 months in China is negative, meaning the cost of selling these products is below than the raw material. Overall, CPI is also seems very lower than expected. Every single month for the last couple months, we have survey number for CPI, but the actual number came out is lower. And it's bouncing around negative 1 to 1% CPI, meaning the consumption side is so weak. So given all these, and people realize China is not doing good, equity market goes down and down, and there is a critical number. It's called 3,000 points on Shanghai Index. The government in China is trying to protect that from flowing below 3,000 points. But I think earlier this year is 2,600 points, which is way below than 3,000 points. So Chinese government cannot stand it anymore. The confidence of individuals are so low. The consumer confidence is probably the all-time low, and they want to do something. So on September 26, Xi Jinping and all the top officials have to do something and come up with a list of stimulus, that including like 1 trillion yuan to inject it by all the state banks and by lowering the reserve required ratio by 50 basis points, lower the 7-day benchmark rate by 20 basis points. All these numbers are already kind of digested by the market. And if you have seen the news, for starting from the 27th of September to the first 2 days of right after the China national holiday on the 8th of October, the market went up like 27%. But for the last week, it started to declining from that high point of 3,600 point to now it's only 3,200 point.
So Joe, we talked a little bit offline here, but we discussed, you basically told us about how they just popped up with that national holiday that's typically, is it every 10 years that you told us?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the reasoning for that? I know that it's almost like kind of uplift the momentum of the consumer confidence a little bit, but it seemed obviously that worked, right? For a little bit there, but can you allude or elaborate a little bit more on kind of what that did to the people of China, and then, you know, how that happened, unfolded?
Yep. So national holiday, October 1st, 1949 is the Communist Party saying, okay, this is the new China, People's Republic China, which is the date of October 1st of 1949 is funded. So it's 75-year marked in the 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That's why every 5 years is kind of a big deal in celebration in China's calendar.
Okay.
So that's why Chinese government want to make something special, and especially given the confidence so low, the survey before the holiday, the data showing the reservation for all the hotels, all the flights are kind of down, not expected by the Chinese officials. They want to do something to boost confidence. So for by boosting confidence, they did by all the stimulus and trying to lift up the confidence in the stock market, on the confidence of the economy overall.
Mm-hmm. But just to elaborate on that a little bit more too, I think it's important for our listeners to know kind of the idea of what's really going on in China. And it's essentially, there's just not enough spending, right? They have kind of the opposite issue of what the U.S. has dealt with for so long. It's an inflationary environment in the U.S., and then they have a deflationary environment. So there's just no spending going on. Nobody's really wanting to go out there and put the money out there, right? They're just kind of putting it in reserves, essentially, right? So essentially what they need is stimulus. And why is the CCP so restrictive on that? Why won't they really commit to that?
I would say the confidence is from they cannot make money as easy as before, as all the plants are moving away from China, causing the speed of growing is kind of slowing down and money outflow. Mm-hmm. If you look at the FDI, foreign direct investment, it was down about 30% year to date. So, which means it used to be, for example, I just make up a number, it used to be 100, now it's only 70 invest in China, then that 30% down in terms of the activity can significantly impacting the economy activity.
Interesting.
So are there any kind of constraints that the Chinese central bank has? I mean, you know, we've seen the U.S. kind of do their lowering of rates, and the impact it has on the economy is kind of still, I would say, up for debate with regards to how it affects demand, whether it's something immediate or delayed. And those are kind of the intricacies of, you know, the U.S. real estate market or just the U.S. consumer itself. We're not as exposed to interest rates. So maybe the adjustment in interest rates are just not as immediate. Is China kind of reluctant to reduce interest rates? Is that the way to kind of spur on this demand? And what they're doing now, is that going to be enough for Chinese demand to be lifted? Or is it just kind of something that's deeper in the Chinese psyche, I guess, of just confidence?
Timing is important. Like, China want to be utilizing Chinese yuan as a international currency, like US dollar, or it's not replacing US dollar, but it's more like becoming a more major currency that is traded similar to euros or Japanese yen. Right now, they're only 4% market share of Chinese yuan, but China want to make it boosted to a certain level that's more traded globally. To make it traded globally, they want to make the exchange rate to be more steady. To make that steady, when China's cutting interest rate, having more QE or any stimulus, it can make the money deflated or depreciate against US dollar. So China is kind of pacing themselves to see what is US Federal Reserve is trying to lower cut rate. When the US Federal Reserve is cutting more rates, China has more time window to do more stimulus with the condition that the currency is not deflated too much.
So also, I think that's very interesting that you say that. And I also feel like there's another constraint, is that because China is such a export-oriented economy, that it's almost like they're constrained with regards to if the yuan gets too strong, right? Because then those export markets, and then those export markets are, you know, not as competitive as maybe other areas like Vietnam or something like that. Is that an issue, or is that not really thought of? Because one thing that's been strong, and what's kind of surprising, is that Chinese exports have still been pretty healthy. So it's more of kind of a consumption side of things than their actual production, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess there's no condition as too strong, because China has to utilize the yuan to buy all the raw material. China is not a resource-rich country. It has to be buying all the crude oil, all the raw materials like iron ore from Australia and Brazil, and all the agricultural products from America and South America.
So that kind of gets negated, that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's really not as much of a problem. Okay. Well, that's something interesting. That's something I've learned, because I always thought that was kind of in the thoughts, but mm-hmm. So they're more kind of constrained with regards to trying to get away from the US dollar and have the yuan become more of a global reserve currency.
It's funny though, because they're doing that, but they're almost at the mercy of whatever the Federal Reserve is going to be doing. So mm-hmm. it's almost a conflicting argument there. They're trying to separate themselves, but they can't, because if they do that, then the U.S. is basically holding them to what they're going to do as far as stimulus regarding, you know.
Definitely.
And I think that kind of shows the importance of why the Fed is kind of, people, all eyes are on the Fed whenever they speak. And then other central banks kind of do, they act or react to how the Fed kind of respond. So I think that's really interesting. But, you know, just to tie it back to kind of oil, you know, this is an oil show, but we're talking about a bunch of macro stuff. What kind of would spur on demand in terms of oil demand? Is there, like, other than interest rates, or does that have anything to do with kind of the real estate market? I would assume real estate market and construction would be very highly tied to kind of oil consumption. And are there any efforts being made to kind of prop up real estate as well?
There are all kinds of new stimulus and policy changes to lifting up the property market. As you know, China is trying to crack down bubbles in that property market for the last 2 years. But it turned out to be when the property market is down, it's connected to all businesses' confidence of consumers, and they use property as their collateral to have loans. When the value of these properties are going down, they have to kind of a margin call. They have to pay extra to keep their loans active. So it's causing so many issues here and there in terms of local government debt is higher because local government used to be can sell land at high prices to these property makers. So they can buy at high prices at even higher prices for the houses. But the houses are prices are down, so they cannot sell the price of the land at high prices, or demand of the land is lower, which means they cannot fill the gap of having the holes from the increasing debt in the local government.
So they kind of, it seems like these problems are just not going to be solved immediately with anything.
Could you argue though that a federal cut, or a Federal Reserve cut, rate cutting cycle could lead to any sort of consumption growth
in China,
in the U.S., and then that
if
domino
China follows kind of.
Yes. So, by the way, the new data just came in today. The used house market, or what do you call this in the U.S.? Existing house sales is actually boosting 40% up month over month. It's a good sign to say, showing that stimulus is functioning for the last couple weeks. And the price of the existing home went up from negative 12% year over year. Now it's a negative 10% year over year. It's like a 2% or 3% up in the last 2 weeks happening.
Well, that's kind of, I think when you see all these headlines about demand being weak, mm-hmm. or manufacturing data being weak, or something coming out of China that's weak, I think that's actually the time when you're like, okay, well, things are probably turning the corner. Because that's, every time when you start to hear and see that frequently, maybe we've hit the bottom and maybe we're kind of on the way up. But that's something that we'll kind of see going forward.
What do you think, Joe? Are you bullish the Chinese economy, or what are your overall thoughts?
I want to bullish on Chinese economy, but I can see there are a lot of the long-term issues it's not comparable with the last financial crisis in 2008. In 2008, China also had the crisis along with the financial crisis in the U.S. China spent 4 trillion yuan to support the market, boosting property market. And we have analysis on that paper, what happened in 2008 versus now. The stimulus level is similar and even more this time, but the background is changing. So what's changing is in 2008, U.S. is still buying China's products, and there's no direct conflicts or between U.S. and China, and there are more money flowing in from foreign investors. So the conditions are different, and the Chinese population is still growing back then. Overall confidence higher, there's less direct conflicts on like high technology and disputes around Taiwan or the South China Sea. So there are just way more background today compared to 16 years ago on what these stimulus can do to the China's market, because the long-term issue exists now.
So I guess I could summarize it as cautiously optimistic.
Yes. More optimistic on the short-term rebound.
Okay.
So 2025 could be a stronger year than
24.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that probably will tie up our segment with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
But before you go, we do have just one question. What is your favorite barbecue in the city? What restaurant, and what's your order there?
Well, I go to Jack Stack a lot.
Oh, okay.
I like burnt ends.
Okay.
So.
Good choice.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a good choice. Always very trusty. You can't go wrong there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Been around forever.
All right. Well, appreciate your time, Joe. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, that was a great interview with Joe. I think I learned quite a bit. One thing to take away that I didn't know prior to this was just how kind of the Chinese central bank will have eyes on the Fed and is kind of, I won't say at the mercy of the Fed, but they are looking at the Fed for how they could drop rates kind of just to keep the yuan strong. And maybe perhaps we're on the other side of that weakness in Chinese demand. But that was a great interview with Joe, and hopefully we'll have him back in later series.
All right. That's all for us today. Thank you guys all for listening. You can check us out on Twitter or X at EnergyKC. If you have any inquiries, feel free to email us at focusonfuels@stonex.com. I also want to give a shout out to Alex. He just came out with a report on the Matterhorn pipeline. I want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to read that. It's going to be pretty important for Permian growth, that we definitely think there's some good information there. So check that out whenever you get a chance. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform for insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter. Email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.